A discussion with Steve Farrell. Welcome to Create with Trip Elix. Hey, it's me. In this episode, number 6, I hope you enjoy my guest as much as I do. Now, on with the discussion with Steve Farrell. So you're selling a book now? Is that what you're...
I've got a book called Game Show Trivia.
Uh-huh.
And, I think he probably got the flyer on it.
Yep, that I did.
And I started it putting the facts together over 20 years ago when I was studying for Jeopardy.
I see. How did you do for Jeopardy?
Well, I've taken the test. I took the test out in California at the Jeopardy studio 5 times starting in 1997. I flew out there from St. Louis and I passed it each time, got a personal interview, and but my phone never rang. Then 9/11 happened and they started giving the test at a hotel right beside the Culver City studio. I took it there twice, passed it twice. My phone still never rang. Now we're into 2003 and my company put me on midnight shift and I started suffering from sleep deprivation and I was unable to do the Jeopardy stuff anymore. But the book first debuted in 98 and it was called The Cultural Literacy Trivia Guide. And it's now in its 6th edition. I keep updating it on a regular basis. And the 6th edition is by far the best edition yet. It's got over 16,000 facts that come up regularly on Jeopardy or Millionaire or any of the other quiz shows.
So the whole trick to winning the game is just remembering the facts?
Yeah. If you watch the show regularly, I mean, year over year, like I have, you will see there's certain facts that come up over and over again. And I call this in the Goldilocks zone. You know, not too easy that everybody knows it, not too hard that nobody knows it. And that's what the writers are challenged with this, getting these clues in the Goldilocks zone. So I put it all in the categories of these Goldilocks questions. And you know, I've got some pretty big chapters like countries and geography and literature. And, you know, some chapters are just one page. Like I've got the Zodiac. That's the very last chapter, Chinese and Western Zodiac. So, but there's a lot to writing the questions and getting them at the exact right difficulty to make the show interesting. And the Jeopardy writers do very well at that.
I see. Well, most of those guys probably, I mean, the people that I would imagine are contestants overall do a little bit better financially than the writers of those types of programs. I can't imagine they get paid a hell of a lot.
Yeah, a lot of lawyers on there especially.
Did you spend all your time around the St. Louis area or did you?
Oh, well, I was raised in Central Illinois and I was hired after tech school. I was hired by a small airline here in St. Louis called Ozark Airlines. There's some trivia for you.
And I've been on that.
They were usurped by TWA in 1986, who was bought again by American in 2002. So my time is continuous since 1975, and I just retired 2 weeks ago today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How do you like not doing that? Or are you still watching the game shows every day? Or
I have watched Jeopardy continuously for its 36-year run. And even before that, when I was, you know, in grade school, they had it on from 64 to 74 with Art Fleming. And they had the cardboard clues, and somebody behind the board would raise them, you know, mechanically. And
wow.
It's funny because sometimes they'd get stuck sideways and they'd get lodged in and all that. But they did away with all that problem when they went to a individual TV screen for every clue.
Yeah, well, the The computerization in the game show industry, I would imagine, they went a little bit slower than the rest of society, I would imagine. I'm just an outsider. I didn't really ever watch that stuff. My grandparents did. My mom did for a while, and she lost interest. But I wasn't really...
been just drawn towards the trivia, you know, just... you know, don't call me between, you know, 4:30 and 5 o'clock because I'm not going to answer the phone. But, you know, I don't know why. It's just interesting to me that, you know, and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of other people like that.
I get the pathology, and there's a lot of people that have a commonality doing a whole bunch of different things. My thing about doing this is introducing people to different walks of life and things, and you fit right into that, and that's perfect because of who you are. But you know, part of your work life and your interest in the TV life isn't all that wraps you up. I mean, you have some trophies behind you. You played pool for a while.
I played pool when the pool halls are open, which they're not.
Yeah.
I played a couple leagues and probably practiced one more time a week. You know, when I was younger, I was an active skier. I loved Colorado. And a lifelong basketball player. I played basketball for 47 years, at least three times a week. I'll go over some facts in my book.
Sure.
I make the statement on my website that James Holzhauer, the amazing guy that won 33 straight games and holds all top 10 individual game scoring records, I accuse him or say that he memorized the 6,000 clues that are in my book. And the reason for that is during his 33 game run, he attempted to answer 427 clues that were in my book. And of those 427, he got every one of them right. That means of the ones he rang in on first and attempted to answer, he got 427 right and zero wrong. So that's a pretty good argument for me that he had my book memorized.
Yeah, it does. That's a very compelling argument.
Uh-huh.
What did you do? You worked in tech?
Yes. I was an avionics technician. I certified the plane to land in the fog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Among many other things. But that, you know, that was probably the most responsible part of my job.
Did they finally, did the planes, since you got retired recently, you would actually know this. Did the planes ever move over to GPS
a long time ago?
Well, they were having problems. I know in New York, they pulled it down, Newark, because when they were doing the test at 4 o'clock every afternoon, the GPS would get completely jammed, and they ended up finding a truck. There was a truck that was on a route, and he had a GPS jammer that was running on the New Jersey Turnpike that jammed the aircraft coming in at 4.
I've never heard of that. Never heard of GPS being jammed because they're pulling in several satellites at the same time.
Yeah, but all on one frequency.
How you would jam them all, but yeah.
No, all you got to, it's relatively, GPS is one of the problem with all of this stuff is that one, GPS, you're right, it is coming in from different places, but it's actually on a single frequency. So all you got to do is give a greater wattage on that frequency, and you overwrite whatever is coming in, and you just overwrite it with a dumb number, and the device is dead.
Yeah. The antenna that receives the GPWS is on top of the airplane. So, and mm-hmm. it shoots directly up to the satellite. So you not only that, you got this fuselage and the people and the baggage and everything, you know, blocking that route. So I don't know how difficult that would be, but I imagine they shut him down pretty quickly.
Well, there's a lot of truckers around with those because you can find them with your cell phone if you're ever running on the highway and getting direction. I've had my GPS get goofed on my phone several times in between things, and I just wait for it to recover. Just slow down and get away from the rest of the traffic, and miraculously it comes back. Mm-hmm. Those little boxes, I think, sell for $35.
Really?
Yeah. They're not real expensive. They plug into the set, into the cigarette lighter.
So anyway, I've done a survey of, you know, hundreds of Jeopardy games, and I have found that about 47% of the clues that are on any individual game are contained within my book.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a huge advantage. And when you get to Daily Doubles and Final Jeopardy, it's over 50%. So you've got a huge advantage over your opponents if you know the information that's in game show trivia. Recently, they had a tournament they called the GOAT Tournament, Greatest of All Time.
Uh-huh.
And they had what they consider the three greatest players, and that's Ken Jennings. And he had a 74-game winning streak back in 2003. And then Brad Rutter, who's the top game show winning contestant of all time, over $4.6 million.
Wow.
And then they had this Ken Holzhauer that had this 33-game winning streak last year. And Brad, you know, I expected him to win the tournament just because of his reputation. He'd already beat Ken three times going head-to-head. But he suffered a meltdown, and I think they showed him studying, and he had nine books, and the spines were showing. One of them was Ken Jennings' Trivia Almanac, but I didn't see a copy of my book there amongst that nine. And I contend that if he had studied my book, that he could have done much, much better, maybe even won the tournament. He missed three key clues on Double or Nothing clues that were in my book. And it just kind of blew me away. He should have known this stuff. He could have known this stuff if he just spent $18 on my book.
Have you ever thought of hiring a kid that's a pretty boy that can memorize to be a shill and feed him and support him and get him into place and train him?
Well, maybe I'm retired now. I think about stuff like that.
So who were the guys that that were on Jeopardy that went against Watson? And then IBM thing.
That was Brad Rutter and Ken Jennings. And Watson, who was not connected to the internet, blew him away.
Yeah. And
it was like when they first did computer chess. You know, it was about 15 years ago, maybe more, that they figured out that it was Kasparov, you know, couldn't beat, you know, the computer advanced so far that the computer's chess was better than Kasparov's, and he was the world champion for many, many years. And now they've got that way with general information, like what's on Jeopardy. So the computer in that area has now surpassed the human knowledge.
I disagree with you, because there's two points to knowledge.
Yeah, I'm what you're getting at, yes.
Yeah, no, well, there's emotional knowledge, and computers know nothing about that.
Well, I think maybe Hal did a little bit on 2001.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we won't have Hal, because the voice of Hal died a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was fake computer stuff. I mean, the current AI implementation, if you use Google, you're messing with AI. If you use Twitter, that's an AI engine. If you play the games on some of the games on Facebook, those are AI. I'll tell you that there's a game that a lot of people play. It's called Candy Crush. You ever play that one?
I've seen people playing it, people that are like addicted to it. And, you know, I'm highly addicted to stuff like that. So I'd stay away from it. Because once I started playing, you know, I got into Tetris. And, you know, I got to be like the Tetris world champion because I would just sit down to play it after work and I would look up and it'd be like 3 hours later. That's how locked in on it was. I could make the Kremlin, you know, you'd start off with a small rocket taking off and then a larger and larger than the Atlas and then the Saturn V. And then when you finally beat the whole thing, the Kremlin would launch itself into space. You know, it was a Russian game. So I could make the Kremlin take off. It's hand-eye coordination.
I see. Yeah. When you were doing the stuff with the planes and avionics, were the planes that you were working on, did those have the 110-volt sockets finally on your line?
Well, they added them to the seats so you could recharge your cell phones. But the planes, your household outlet runs on 60 cycles per second AC, and the planes run on 400 cycles per second. So because of the advanced technology, they needed this higher it was useful to have this higher frequency. So, and I've been shocked by both. And let me tell you what, that 400 cycles, well, it knocked me, you know, to the back of the cockpit. So pretty shocking.
To say the least.
Yes.
So you watch those shows. Are there any other competitors coming up now that Trebek and is having outs? How is that working out?
Well, I look for Alex to retire at the end of this current season, which is about the end of June, because this chemo's really taken a toll on him.
Right.
And he came out and said a couple months ago that he'll give 30 seconds notice when he announces his retirement, which is telling me we'll be at the end of one of his shows, and the logical time for that would be at the end of the current season.
So are there any competitors that you've seen on the pike? Because this market has been going on since, like, when did the first game shows come out? Like in the late 1940s, early 50s?
Yeah, they had the scandal in the late 50s where they were feeding the answers to Van Doren. His name was Van Doren. And so they had the great game show scandals, and I don't know, he was winning hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they finally told him, you know, answer this wrong so they could move on to But that flipped the industry on its head. And it came under FCC, and they regulate all the games now, and they're there on the set to make sure that everything's on the up and up.
Nobody seems to have done that yet on social media, have they?
What's that?
Run a game that is a logic game that
is interactive? Yeah, I was talking
about
that the other day with the editor of my new book. And he says it's wide open now, especially with there's not being any sports. People are looking for entertainment to fill the void. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I would I probably will be looking at now that I have time to do it. So here, I'll take some statistics for you. This is about, is that all right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is James Holzhauer's run last year. He won a total of $2.462 million. And of this total, $1.294 million came directly from clues that are in my book. Like I said before, you got 427 in a row correct without missing a single one. And he had some phenomenal Final Jeopardy statistics I was looking at earlier here tonight. On the show that was on April 22nd, the Final Jeopardy answer was Lord Elgin. That was on page 127 of my book. and he made over $38,000 on that one question. The game was on April 23rd. It's about Lee and Grant getting together after the Civil War. And he answered that correctly on Final Jeopardy. He made, I think this is a record, $50,000 he made on one question. And that question was in my book.
Wow.
Well, I'm having more time for my trivia now. And, you know, this is the first interview I've done in quite a while. So I'll be getting back into that. You know, I'm getting, putting my name out there and getting responses. And I'm getting feedback on about 75% of what I'm, the feelers I'm putting out.
Well, that's perfect.
One of the things,
there's a couple things about publicity that you probably need to understand, and that is that people do buy instructional stuff, but they, and they don't care who they buy it from. But most people buy things from people that they perceive that they know and that they trust.
They trust.
So when you go on to shows to talk about your stuff, come up with some stories about you. They don't have to be true. They just need to be stories.
Okay. Did I tell you that I lost a girlfriend because of Jeopardy?
No, you didn't.
Okay. I met this gal on the slopes in Colorado, and we hit it off. And after vacation was over, she was in Chicago and I was in St. Louis, and we were still seeing each other. I would go up there for a weekend, and she would come down here for a weekend. That continued for about 3 months. And as it turned out, skiing was about the only thing we had in common. So after 3 months, we were kind of on the way out, and I was sitting there one day watching Jeopardy, and I could hear her saying something in the background, but you know, I'm not listening to her. I'm totally focused on the questions and answers. So anyway, a commercial break comes, and she's on her way out the door. She says, "And one more thing, I'm sick of not being able to talk to you while that stupid show is on." And that's the last words she said to me the last time I saw her.
Well, so, I'm sorry it worked out that way.
But it was the final straw. You know? So that's in my... the flyer I sent you, you know, one of the things is number 7 or so, says, "I understand you lost a girlfriend because of Jeopardy," and then I can tell that story.
Yeah, I'm really bad about reading the questions. I'll tell you, there have been people that have interviewed me that they read the questions verbatim and they say exactly what's in my thing and without a paraphrase, and it drives me nuts.
Yep. Okay, it's got to be conversational. Yes.
Yeah.
Long time ago. So, yeah, you might look over this. You know, this is my idea of an interview. These 10 responses. You always been interested in trivia. What was your idea for writing game show trivia? I told you where I accumulated all the information. And by taking the Jeopardy test, I talked about that. And I do host trivia nights here in St. Louis. And again, it goes.
You do?
Yes. It goes to be able to make the questions interesting and getting them in the Goldilocks zone. And a lot of the people do this hosting. They have no idea how to gauge difficulty. And they'll make them way too easy or make them way too hard. But I shoot for my winning team to get about 88 to 90 out of 100 questions. And I know I've done a good job when I hit right in there. And the average will be about 60 to 65.
How do you do on the Bar Network trivia games?
I don't really play too much. You know, I've got a local host here, and he goes online once in a while. But I was playing locally here on Wednesday nights, and I would play against, you know, teams from Washington University, students of 10 and 12, you know, and I'd won many rounds sitting there by myself, and they're like, you know, these kids are like 40 years younger than me.
Well, some of those bar games, I understand, are some of those have competitive monies. Yeah, DigiGames has got a bunch of stuff that they give as amazing prizes, but it's all lower dollar, couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, I think that would be difficult because this day and age is so easy to cheat. You know, with you just speak into your cell phone, it'll give you the answer what you're looking for. So I don't know, you know, how they would regulate that so much. I even see them at the trivia nights, you know, they're looking up the answer with their cell phones under the table. It just drives me crazy.
Well, they, you know, looking up the question is nothing compared to tapping into the Microsoft AI engine and just have it listen to the room and give you the answer.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, AI is going to change, has changed a lot of things.
Yeah, there's dire warnings coming out from some very smart people, including Elon Musk, about kind of a Terminator scenario. And they say it's like, yeah, well, you know, machines aren't as smart as men yet, but within 5 to 10 years, they will be as smart as machines, as machines will be as smart as people. And then that curve is going to take off and it's going to go up almost straight up like a hockey stick. And what happens when a computer becomes 100 times more intelligent than a human, or 1,000 times more intelligent? And when they're able to not only design the hardware, but the software, when they can rewrite their own software. And this is the scenario that a lot of people, Sam Harris gives an excellent TED talk about, you know, he says it's inevitable. It's going to happen, that we're going to be like ants to the computer.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I am looking forward to is the car industry's answer to AI, because what I envision is that as far as the idea of owning a vehicle is silly with insurance and upkeep, when I could lease a machine that would be at my doorstep within 5 minutes, that would be like a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce in quality, and mm-hmm. cost me less than the payment that I would make for the cheapest American or European or Japanese car a month, and just have a fleet of them sitting around driving people around. Why would you want a cheap, crappy car that you'd have to upkeep when the upkeep on one in a shared situation would be so cheap?
Well, that's the Tesla scenario. They say they're going to be there in about 3 years, and it's going to put Uber and Lyft out of business because you're not going to need a driver.
Yeah, well, Uber and Lyft are diversifying.
Yes, they need to.
They've been diversifying, requiring humans, because now they're doing food delivery.
Uh-huh.
So even though they have the car moving around by itself, they've still got the delivery issue. They're going to take over the delivery sector for pizza.
Well, if you buy a Tesla now, then they will be able to convert it. You know, now, you know, if there's a problem with your car, they have a mass recall, you got to take your car in. With Tesla, they just update the software.
Yeah, no, I've seen them. They've had Tesla. They were bringing Tesla around the hacker cons for a while, giving prizes for hacking into the car, which is a joke. you offer somebody a bounty of cash versus crap.
Several of the major companies are doing that. They're professional hackers. They said, how do you get into, you know, if you, we want you to find a back door in so we can close that back door. and even the Pentagon.
Yeah, except the Pentagon and Intel and AMD did something stupid, and that was they built backdoors into every computer. So every CPU that's been manufactured up until 2019 has flaws in it that you can get into the computer from the outside, no matter what operating system is on it.
And in China, they have these big, huge, humongous buildings of people that that's all they do is hack into, you know, American companies. And they save all this research and development. By stealing it from us.
I'm not going to go down the political track because they're
right.
Both sides are equally stupid. Both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
My whole problem with the with. So how much of the strategy, the games that are playing, how much of the strategy that you would employ into games like chess or Go are played into the games that are the game shows? Is there any?
Well, it's mental exercise. You know, get your brain, you know, I know when I get into this and I'm doing research, you know, 6, 8, 10 hours, that my memory gets better. I'm 65.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that I used to when I was 35. But I noticed that the recall comes a lot faster if I'm there, you know, working on that. You know, I study a couple languages, and if I spend a few hours doing that or even reading, that my mind will function better than when I have a dead night sitting in front of the TV watching the I saw Joker last night. So, you know, I didn't think it was all thing it was hyped up to be, but it was, you know, it was mildly entertaining.
Was it really violent?
Yes, very violent. De Niro gets shot between the eyes, point blank. And you could see it coming. Everybody knew it was coming. Everybody was watching the movie. He's got his gun with him, and he's, the Joker's just getting angrier and angrier, you know. But it has a lead into the Batman story in this movie, although Batman's not in it.
Yeah, well, the story of how they ended up getting that franchise away from the studios and the way that that company actually made the path so that they could survive was really interesting. That at some point that's a topic that I actually would like to publicize, because that was a really good move by a little teeny company that was on its last leg that was getting ripped off.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we all know Batman from the 60s, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Corny TV show. You know, they got this little flame going out of the back of this car, and they call it a turbo, you know, and I'm like, okay. Even, you know, when I was 12 years old, I knew it was hokey, you know, but still. And Batman, you know, he's wearing the skin tight, whatever, and he's so out of shape, you know, and they've got him doing all this acrobatics, climbing up the side of buildings and all this stuff. Just, and nobody's ever got a gun. They only end up in a crash, pow, boom fist fight at the end, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in the 1960s, when everybody had a gun and they just shot and you fell over.
Yeah. Yeah, there was never any blood back then.
Yeah, no, I know.
Any blood. Now, you know, each shot, blood spurts out, you know.
Yeah, more than reality.
More than what it would normally be, yeah. Yeah, that was the graphic part about that movie last night when he did shoot De Niro. Now they got the bullet going clear through always now, and it hitting something on the wall and splattering blood all over the wall. And, you know, that's something fairly recent in the movie. So.
Yeah, well, they like to recycle the effect, but then a lot of that CGI stuff is getting to the point now. I can't even tell. I mean, it used to be they were good, but not that good. Now the point that I can't really tell. Yeah, we can run through your questions on your book. We can run through them right now if you want.
Well, I've already conveyed, you know, most of the information. And, you know, I've got it written down, but like you said, I try to make it conversational.
Yeah, and that's, and, you know, most of the people, some of the people are going to be, some people just are looking for a hole to fill, like some of the radio people that are on iHeart that run talk shows. They're just looking for anything. Yeah, I'm more or less looking for different types of people.
I don't listen to NPR, but I did have it on about 3 weeks ago. And the guy they had on there, you know, they're reaching a big audience. And the guy they had on there was just boring. I says, you know, I can do 10 times a better job than that guy, you know, and I can reach a whole nation, you know, and sell a lot of books. So
the best thing to do is get a few stories like your girlfriend. If they're funny in between, that's even better. And make it so you don't have to be cued for it.
Yeah, I've got that one. Question 9 I can do, you know, conversational, although I've got it written all down. Question 10, it's quite involved because I get into the individual questions and what page you're on in my book and how Brad Rutter just, you know, literally shot himself in the foot. They wanted to know a real person, you know, Catherine the Great's lover. And he gave a guy, Count Vronsky, who's a fictional character in Anna Karenina. And I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? You know? So I get into that, you know, I got a full page.
And yeah,
I figured, you know, if I do it a few times, then, you know, I can just make bullet points and make it all conversational, you know.
Well, the thing that I found is, honestly, knowing who you are, knowing what you're about, and that you have a book is more compelling than your book.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
That's pretty much the way it goes. And you watch Jeopardy, and you compiled the book, but personal things about yourself. That's when you go to large publicity things. The people that are at those events want to know who you are and what is your product, but they really want to know who you are. And it takes a long time to kind of figure that out, figure out that brands of things don't really mean anything, not to the plain person that you're going to sell something to. They don't care what your brand is. And in your case, your belief is that people are going to be helped by what you provide.
Yes. All those million people that want to get on Jeopardy.
Did your book include the strategy to get past the hotel?
No, there's a lot of Jeopardy books out there. And almost all of them do, you know, they've been written by former champions or whatever. And mine is just the facts, just the straight facts. Starts with abbreviations, ends in Zodiac, and there's 58 chapters along the way. And all the stuff that's in the Goldilocks zone that you're going to see on every show, a high percentage of the material that's in the book on every show, 45%, right around, it hovers right around there. You'd be going into a Jeopardy competition knowing in advance 45% of the material. So that's a huge advantage. That's, I believe, one of the reasons James Holzhauer had his incredible run. And I don't think he's going to talk about it, because that's one of, you know, he's got a lot of secrets, and I think that's one of them.
What do you think his other, what are his secrets? What do you mean?
Well, he has studied the buzzer. You know, you got to get ahead of the other people. And he has taken the motion out of it. Instead of, you know, people doing like this, you know, that costs you fractions of a second when you're doing that. You know, he's got it held, one hand held by the other, and he's just pushing that button. And it's an advantage. It's an advantage for him. And he's got it down to the nitty gritty, where it took a, when he lost, it was a perfect storm that beat him. And the main thing was not being able to use the daily doubles, which what he really, you know, kicked ass on was the doubling up on at least one daily double, often two during the show. But the first daily double he got on the very first question, he was only able to make $1,000. And this gal that beat him got the other two, which means he wasn't able to put the game as a runaway, because he always used the daily doubles to make it a runaway. So now she's playing his game when she gets the second daily double, and she knows she needs to be in first place, and she bet most of her pile and got it right. And so she was actually ahead of him going into Final Jeopardy. So makes all the difference in the world controlling the daily doubles. And the perfect storm he lost on was, you know, getting somebody really very intelligent, not as intelligent as him, but she got the luck value involved in the game and got the daily doubles when she needed them instead of him.
Where is he now?
He's back in Las Vegas doing his gambling. He's a sports gambler.
Did you ask him to endorse your book?
I sent a lot of copies of my book out to people like James, including James, and never heard from any of them. You know, Brad's got one. I sent one to Brad, but he didn't study it. He probably didn't get it, you know. And sent one to Ken, and sent one to about 20 different champions, you know. I never got any replies from any of them.
Really?
Yep.
That's kind of rude. I wonder how many other people gave him a book.
It's hard to say. You know, I have no idea. I only got three of them returned. So 27 of them or so got opened by somebody.
Right.
But, you know, all the personal information to get a hold of me was in there, and nobody did. So, yeah, it was disheartening. I think at least two or three people, you know, say, oh, you know, I've got, here's a big endorsement. It's on the back of the cover of the book. But this guy, his name's Armon Ketchikan. He called me one day out of the clear blue. I didn't know who he was. And he said, I'd like to thank you because I used the material in your book to win $500,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He says, I just wanted to talk to you personally and tell you thank you.
Wow. Well, that's a good endorsement.
No, it's on the back of the book. Yeah, it's a great endorsement. So, but yeah, I would like to get that from a couple of Jeopardy players too, but I haven't yet. Well, I've got a niche. You know, there's a lot of trivia books out there, and there's a lot of study guides, but I have basically no competition for what I've got here. 16,000 quick hitting facts, you know, super quick hitting facts. He was the basis for Count Dracula, and it's under Romania in countries. And the guy's name was Vlad the Impaler. I don't know if you've heard of Vlad or not. Or his name was Vlad Dracul, as in Dracula.
How much is your book?
It's $18, $17.95.
That's cool.
Yep. So, but every page is like that. I've got 10 pages of books and authors, and they could ask any one of these books. You know, and I'm constantly updating that with new bestsellers. The Oscars need to be updated all the time. Politicians coming and going from office. So now that I'm retired, I plan on putting out an update every year.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, as long as you're, as long as you're actually selling them and it makes it worthwhile to update it.
Uh-huh. Well, I call this the best kept secret in game shows. And that's my objective now that I'm retired, is to make it so it's not such a big secret anymore. Because the material is here. I just have to sell it, you know.
Uh-huh. And I agree with that yawn. I got chicken on my stove that I can smell. Yeah. And it's okay. 10 o'clock in my zone. So I'm going to bid you adieu tonight. All right, buddy. Well, I'm going to go eat my dinner.
Okay. Enjoy your chicken.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed this program. And obviously you did if you got to the very end. I would appreciate it very much if you would share this podcast with other folks that you know out there. And please, please leave me a review on iTunes. I really need to know that you exist. I really appreciate it. And I will be making another episode very shortly. Until then, adios.